This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, this is the time of year when people are thinking about maybe buying a book to read themselves or as a gift. And we don't do many book reviews in this podcast, but there's a very special book out now. It's called The Running Book, and its author, John Connell, is a farmer. He has written before in 2018. He won an award for his book, The Cow Book. It was a wonderful book, and this book too is unique, original, and it's a pleasure to welcome John to the stand. John, first of all, congratulations on writing and finishing a book. It's always hard, and this one in particular seems to be very, very personal. You're a Longford man. You ran around your county, and you ran 42.2K, which is a marathon, I take it. The book is 42 chapters long, and there's 42,000 words in the book. What I want to ask you first is about running. You're not a competitive runner, but you do admire people. Sonia O'Sullivan is one, Paula Radcliffe, and Abebe Bikila, who was a great marathon runner that I remember, a great Olympian that many people will remember. When did you start to run?
Well, Eamon, it's a real honour to be on the podcast. It's one of my firm favourite podcasts to listen to. So thank you, first of all, for creating the show. Running, I suppose, has always been something that has been part of my life. I would have started as a kid in community games, and at one time had quite a bit of promise as a runner, as a sprinter. But becoming a journalist and moving to Australia, I kind of left the sport to one side. And I returned to it about 7 years ago now. I came back to Ireland. I had some mental health problems, and running seemed like the way to regain a hold on life. And yes, in a sense, to you know, to run for something, to run away from something in one case, and then in the ultimate thing, to run for something, which was, I suppose, the joy of life. And I'm reminded of a chap I talk about in the book, an Irish-American cardiologist, Dr. George Sheehan, who's credited with starting the running boom in America in the 70s. And he said, you know, you have to make today your masterpiece. And so that was my way to make today my masterpiece, by going out and pounding the pavement wherever I found myself around the world.
Yes, and as you say, it's when you're running with a certain intensity, you are either running away from something or running towards something. In your case, was it away from something?
Yes, it would have been, Eamon. I suppose there'd been a bit of a destabilization in life, and running sort of descended upon me as an idea of, I had seen this image of a new me, and he was a more athletic person, a person in love with life and movement, and running started really, you know, on treadmills, and then gradually graduating to outside. And I suppose I was rebuilding myself after that fall. Yes. And it was a way to, you know, I often joke it was a sort of a house of cards, but really I was building it with glue rather than just hope.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when people face those dark nights of the soul, they come back with a newfound strength. And, you know, sports people talk about it a lot, getting into flow state. And I think in a sense, for me, the running was a way to get into a life flow state.
Yes.
And that it allowed me to ultimately find the infinite summer inside myself, really, you know. And the book is about that. It's about falling in love with movement, that you can find that infinite summer to carry you through whatever winter you're going through.
Yes. And you're a farmer, and Longford is your county, and you evoke the county. And I want to talk about that in a moment. But I want to talk about being a farmer and the difference between being a farmer and being someone like me, who's a townie. I always feel I'm very much a townie, but there is something that farming people, real farming people, know about life and the human condition and how whimsical everything can be, isn't there? Because nature can damage you, and you're dealing with reality every moment of every day.
Yeah, you know, Eamon, it's a funny thing. Death is quite common on a farm. And
yes.
Life and the balance of life are something that you live with. I remember, I suppose, a story I'll tell you. I remember one lambing season, and it'll be coming into lambing season soon now in about a few weeks. And I've been working for many weeks and bringing new lambs into the world. And I remember one particular lamb was born, perfect lamb, but I didn't get there in time and he was born dead. And I was so delirious and tired that I was trying to, in a sense, will the life back into him. But you can't do that. You can't do that. And it's something that you live with, and the elements can change everything. And, you know, I suppose I'm reminded of I was doing some writing in the summer, and I was talking about my grandfather who would have fought in the War of Independence, and he would have fished by the local river where salmon would have swam up in the spawning season. And I remember my father telling me a story of him catching this big salmon with a pitchfork. And
yeah,
life could change so
yes.
quickly that there was fresh fish and a meal for people. I know that sounds almost ridiculous to say, but we have to remember that 50, 60 years ago, people didn't have that much food and money.
Yes.
So something like that was a cataclysmic event. And I suppose in farming, we're living in the eternal present. And you do things, you're kind of living in the past and present as well, because everything that's done on the farm is done so that it can be ready at a later point in future. We
yes.
make the hay and the silage so that we'll be ready in winter. You're constantly preparing all the time. But then when you're in the present moment, you're not sure what exactly is going to happen. I know we were tagging calves the other day, and one of the calves hurt his leg and tore a muscle. And, you know, that was kind of a death knell for this animal, because he wasn't going to thrive as much. And it all happened in a second. And you say, right, okay, I'm going to have to take a financial hit here.
Yes.
And that's it. So it's an immediate moment, but I suppose any farmer would tell you that that as a way of life, it's a very pleasant one, even though it can be hard at times, because unlike a book or unlike an office job, when you go out and do a job, at the end of the day, you can turn around and look back and say, well, that field has been fenced.
Yes.
That animal has been treated. I've dosed these cattle. There is a sense of completion that that after days of work that things are done, and there's a tiredness that comes with that work. But it's a good tiredness, and
yes.
we often talk about it at home, that it's, you have a sense of, you know, Seneca used to talk about this, that a man gets weary and eventually makes his mind up. that he'll have to settle on this after tiredness. But yes, it's not like that. It's more about a happy tiredness from hard physical work.
And, yeah, there's a joy that is deeply spiritual in when you test yourself in that particular way, or when you are tested in that way, which I have experienced myself, even as a not very good footballer. But there were times when that joy of being so tired, physically tired, filled my body.
Yeah, I think we could call that a good tiredness.
And, yes.
It's you know, I get it from I get it from running, and I get it from farming and physical exertion. I think that you know, people, you know, you said the spiritual there as well. I think, yes, you know, people would, I remember I was giving a talk once, and a chap said to me, oh, well, that's just endorphins. But it's so much more. It's not just the endorphins. It's the mind saying to us that you have done something, you've pushed forward, you've pushed through a limit, and I'm going to reward you by letting your mind, first of all, and I think it's the mind, letting your mind relax. And
yes,
I would have talked with, we mentioned Sonia Sullivan there, and Sonia and I have become friends through this book, and I had an interesting conversation with her in Cork during the summer, and we talked about thinking about things when you're on a run, and she mentioned to me that, you know, even in the highest form of races in the Olympics, that she was still thinking. And I think that it's only when we come to a completion, that we come to a physical end, that we can say, in certainly my case, the mind stops and it goes, okay, you can relax now, you've done your job. And and I think that, I suppose, when I heard that Sonia was thinking when she was running, it did actually, it made me feel an akinness to her, because we were both, we're both thinking about things when we run. And I thought, if a world record holder, my mind is still going, then, you know, the distance between the athletes and us, at least in the mind, is not so far away. So,
and much of what you're thinking about is deeply philosophical. Much of it also is about your county, Longford, Longford is a kind of place we don't think of so much because it's not on the tourist trail, although Centre Parks is down there now. But as a county, it's not somewhere we think about. And maybe you reflect on the War of Independence, the 1798 rebellion, and other formative events in Irish history. You also think, and this is maybe a moment when Longford was in the public eye for the wrong reasons, at the time of Granard and Anne Lovett, when she died in a graveyard giving birth to her baby. She was a young woman, and Gay Byrne took up her story, and it was one of the finest moments in broadcasting, in that he was able to show to this terrible tragedy what life was really like. And you reflect on that a little bit too.
Yeah, I suppose let's take up Anne. And we'll come back to Longford. I suppose my own mother would have only been a few years older than Anne, and Anne's son would, and I talk about this in the book, if Anne's son had have lived, we probably would have known each other.
Yes.
There was only a couple of years between us. I think that Anne's death, and you know, it's we talk about it still. It's still an issue, and of course the Irish Times article that came out a few years ago got everyone talking again. I think I refer to that time as a banality of evils, taking from Hannah Arendt.
From the trial of Eichmann, wasn't it?
Yes, from the trial of Eichmann. And,
yes.
You know, I told the story of Anne. I also told the story of Catherine Corliss and the babies that were found in the septic tank in the same breath.
Yes.
Because I referred to it as, I'm actually a practicing Catholic, but I do refer to it as a terrorism of the soul, because Anne was afraid to speak of her truth and talk about what was happening to her.
Yes.
Because so often, and, you know, the homes were still open then. So often that these unwed mothers were taken away. And I suppose my father said a very good thing to me at the time that the Irish Times article came out. And he said, you know, there was a reason that the walls of these institutions were so high. And it always struck me when he said that. It really hit me because yes. we were keeping things in and keeping things out.
Yes.
And there was a truth. There was a truth that that the church knew. There was a truth that the state knew. There was a truth that certain members of the public knew. But
yes.
It was a banality of evils. And you know, when Arendt talked about the banality of evils, she talked about it in the relationship of that it wasn't evil people. It was actually bureaucratic people
yes.
driven by personal aims.
A little guy doing the numbers. And when she,
yeah.
when she looked at Eichmann, what she saw was a little clerk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, Eichmann never really questioned what he had done and thought himself an innocent man in many ways. He was kind of amazed that he was even in Israel. And I suppose, you know, we are amazed. If we look back now, we would be amazed at what happened to Anne. But
yes.
really, it was this watershed moment, and it changed a little bit, like me saying about my granddad catching the fish. It changed everything.
Yes.
Anne's death changed everything. It is this pivot moment in Irish society. It happened in Longford, but I think it could have been anywhere.
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Now, John, one of the things that struck me reading it was that you've lived outside of Ireland, yes?
Yes, I have, yes, for many years.
Yeah, in Australia. And I would ask you about the perspective you get on your home place when you have been away from it. I always find, I lived in England for 17 years, that I had a different perspective on Ireland and on my own home place having lived away from it. It helped me to recognise things or see things even that people who'd never left there weren't conscious of. Did that?
Yes, I totally agree, Eamon. I think we have to, well, first of all, we're the great immigrant nation, but I think we have to leave in order to come back and see the place with fresh eyes.
Yes.
And for me, I would have left Longford when I was 18 and didn't come back till I was 28. And I was a long time away. And I suppose it's an interesting thing. When you're away, you can become more Irish. And
yeah.
I remember one particular St. Patrick's Day in Sydney, and the day isn't celebrated on the 17th, but going to buy green, white, and orange ribbons to make a little flag for myself to wear at the office. And I think that we become more Irish. But I think in coming back, then, not only do we bring new ideas, which I think is what continually renews this nation, but I think we, and certainly in my case, we saw things with fresh eyes. And when I wrote the Cow book, I was writing about an unchanging way of life, which was farming.
Yes.
But I was looking at it, and I think it was a reviewer said that I was an insider who was also an outsider, because I was able to look at it dispassionately and say, well, this is something that's happening. And I suppose I was amazed more than anyone else that when the book took off internationally. But I think it was I was showing a way of life through a new lens, because I was seeing it through a new lens. And I suppose, Eamon, I was someone who left so young that actually I didn't really know Ireland. And in coming back, I remember, and running was a way to discover that, was to travel around this country and meet people, because my experience had been Longford and university in Dublin, and then Australia and Canada and America. And I suppose in coming back, I was experiencing all this stuff for the first time. And I remember like going to the Cliffs of Moher or going to Newgrange and seeing it for, I suppose, with the value of an outsider's perspective and saying, well, this is fantastic. Like, I can't believe this is here and we don't talk about it. And so,
And what's interesting, sorry to interrupt you, but just to continue that, when you are running around Longford, there are places in Longford that are magnificent, and you described them, and are historic. And that yet we walk past them every day and take them for granted. It could be an old mansion or a castle or something.
Yeah, and I think, sorry, Eamon, go on.
No, it's just, that's what makes the book so nice and beautiful and engaging, really, that there's beauty in the everyday, shall we say, the commonplace.
Yeah, I think, well, you see, there is, and, you know, Kavanagh used to talk about that, the ordinary bounty of the everyday.
Yes.
And I suppose, and Seamus Heaney did the same thing. He turned Ballaghy into a world famous place. But the other aspect of the book was talking about our colonial and post-colonial past. And really, you see, you know, why Longford? But Longford was the edge of the Elizabethan Empire when the Tudors were coming to I suppose claim Ireland. And it was this outpost of British ideals, and beyond it, and not even the whole county wasn't even controlled. The Gaelic lords controlled half the county. That beyond that lay the wildness of the Gaelic lords and the Gaelic people. And you know, Edmund Spenser and figures like that would have talked about this. And so I looked at that, and then I started to realize that Longford had been the center of Ireland, the Midlands.
Yes.
But it's also been this transition zone, because it is between it becomes a place where stories start and end. We have the Elizabethans. Then we move forward to 1798. The rebellion ends here. Then we have the War of Independence, and we have some of the biggest fighting outside of Dublin and Cork is happening here. And then we move forward to Anne Lovett again. And it's this transition zone between, I suppose, two different worlds, because, and this was something that, you know, I didn't know him, and it's something I started to realize and look into. But in this transitionary space and this pivot point in history, it occurs again and again as a wellspring of story to understand the greater aspect of our national story.
Yes.
And yeah,
you know, continue. Sorry, you were going to say.
Well, I was going to say that in a sense, you know, the book is heavily Longford, but you know, it branches out and goes to Burma and Australia.
Well, like all great books, and it is a fine book, you make what is Longford international. It's because we're all living the same internally and intellectually and emotionally. We're all living in the same world, and it's sort of making what is ostensibly geographically small international. This is a book that anyone can relate to. And you do write about, you know, say, Abibi Bikila and others outside of your home place and relate to them.
Yes, I mean, the running heroes are like Abibi and Paula and Sonia. And these are people that I suppose I carry with me. These are people who... if we're to talk about the sports stars in the book, who I talk about, it's the relationship that that they bring to not just a runner but to a person of different ways of experiencing life. And I think, you know, the one character I loved that I talked about was John Akibuya, who was a Ghanaian hurdler.
Yes.
And who was supposed to, you know, he was destined to be remembered as an Olympic great, but Idi Amin boycotted an Olympics, and his great rival Edwin Moses won unopposed.
Yes.
And Edwin Moses is remembered in the athletics world, where, you know, and I remember watching a documentary about it, where he acknowledged that really, you know, if Akibuya had run, you know, things would be very different. And I suppose the thing that hits me about professional athletes is that, and it's a little bit like, you know, Tokyo 2020, that you can only control the controllables within your own life, and yet external factors can happen that change absolutely everything.
Yes.
whether it's Olympic boycotts, the 1980s Olympics, or it's the pandemic, that that these people are they're waiting for a pinnacle moment in time. And, you know, there are athletes, and there's probably one or two listening to this podcast in Ireland who were preparing for 2020 who may know themselves that that 2021 might be a completely different world in for them.
Yes.
And that their moment may have slipped by. And that's the joy and the tragedy of sports.
Of this moment as well. We've just been speaking to former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern about Brexit and COVID combining to make our future very dangerous, and indeed to make our present very dangerous, John. I want to ask you about combining farming with running, and if that's possible, because many people have a feeling that they've something to say and they want to write. And you've clearly done it and done it very, very successfully with the cow book and now with the running book. How hard did you find to actually write and to get the solitude for that?
I suppose, Eamon, I had been a journalist and a documentary maker in Australia and Canada.
Right.
And that world had come to me quite easily, but I had, and I loved it, but I had always harbored the idea of writing a book. And I'll be honest, Eamon, it was the hardest thing I've ever done.
Hard. I can testify. It is a hard, solitary grind, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, I was in Australia in 2015, and I suppose people don't know, you know, it's speaking of Bertie Ahern, you know, 10 years to be an overnight success was Bertie's great line. And I think in 2015, I was in Australia, and I said to my then girlfriend, who's now my wife, that I was going to go home for a month to try and write a book. And that month turned into 3 years.
Yes.
And I wrote two other books, one about JFK and one about refugees. And I had actually, I'd been rejected for both of them. And it really, the Cow book was my last attempt at trying to live a creative life and to see could it work. And I was working on the farm, and I would make my notes as I went about on the day. And the other thing is, Eamon, which people also don't talk about, is, you know, that there was no money coming in, so I was I was completely broke, you know.
Yeah.
And I was living this life really to see if I could do it, and I had given up a career in an attempt to do it.
Yes.
But funnily enough, when you have actually stopped caring in the sense that you can finally write something true.
Yes.
That's when you really start to hit the pay dirt. And yes. I think that when I the Cow book, there was a row in the book, and my father and I separated for a few weeks, and I went to Spain, and I started to write the book there. And
yes.
It poured out of me in 6 weeks, and it was an experience that really I was totally uninhibited from myself, because I was the ultimate gamble had now been played.
You'd gone all in, as we say in the casino.
Yeah, I'd gone all in, and I remember saying to my friend, our parish priest, who actually gave the book its name, I said to him, well, you know, this is it. I've done it now. Like I can give no more. And if nothing happens, then at least I know that I've given it my all. And then I suppose there is something, and Irish people really, really respond to it. It's authenticity.
Yes.
Irish people have I don't want to be cursing on the podcast, but they have a very strong,
work away.
Well, they have a very strong bullshit detector. And I think that it was there that I discovered my style, and the running book was quickly in the wings at the same time. And it was, you know, it might seem to people to be a strange move to have wrote a book about farming and life, and then to write a book about running and colonialism. But in my mind, I finished the Cow book with a run, and that was the next thing. And the book is dedicated to Stephen Ray, and Stephen and I would be good pals. And
yes.
I had said to him that I'm going to write a book that is an examination of our past, as well as about living in the present moment. And I think that really, when you write, all you can do is be your authentic self, and
yes.
It's that bullshit detector. People will gravitate towards the real,
the authentic. Well, I can assure you, John, that it is real. It's very authentic. It's very beautiful book, and you've succeeded. I know the feeling of failure, and I know the feeling of success, and I can assure you this is a very fine book, and we're very, very grateful to you for joining us on the stand. The book is called The Running Book, and the author is John Connell. It is all in, it's very, very brave, and it's rich in detail and experience. So we're very grateful to you, John. If anyone wants to buy a book, it's 42 chapters, and it's very, very readable. And you learn lots about many different things. Thank you very much, John, for joining us. And when you finish your next book, I hope you'll come and talk to us again.
I will indeed, Eamon. I'd love that. And I enjoyed the chat immensely.
Thank you. Thanks to John.
Thank you.
Thanks to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.